say. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. Your language are your tears, are your tears. But what I got to say right now is love enough, yeah. Love enough, yeah. Love enough. Or can you love some more? Is the love enough?
The music credits for today's program are the opening theme, The Bell for Freedom by Stevie Wonder, The Times They Are A-Changing by Odetta, The Heathens by Bob Marley, and Is Love Enough by Michael Franti and Spearhead.
Can you love some more? It goes on and on. For 1,000 years, I say.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need.
Hi, Paul Fisher from WBAI then and WBAI now. Tired of pesky programs interrupting our fascinating fundraising drives? No problem. Don't touch that dial. We can sell you conspiracies and miracle cures till the sun goes supernova. Or you can help WBAI again become a station known for programs, not just products. How? Thought you'd never ask. Become a BAI buddy. That's a minimum $10 a month donation for each of the next 12 months. Help end the heartbreak of psoriasis cures and other lotions, potions, and nostrums sold on the radio by sending us money to make radio. Go to WBAI.org, our website, and become a BAI buddy.
Well, I don't know if I'm walking on solid ground.
Why doesn't it come? Why doesn't it come?
Were you waiting for me, Dan Malley?
Who's that? Who spoke?
The Shadow.
The Shadow?
There isn't much time, Malley. They're coming after you to take you to the chair. Speak quickly. What have you to say?
Just this. For the best in old-time radio thrills, adventure, and comedy, tune in to the Golden Age of Radio, 7 to 9, Sunday nights, right here on WBAI New York.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Wednesday night program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Well, how many times have you heard me say we're going to have a Sheckley story this morning? We're going to have a Sheckley story this morning. I'm not even going to say which Sheckley or Courtney. Just stay tuned.
Hour of the Wolf movie review, air date April 3rd, 2014. Noah, take one. I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. And let's start off with a bit of housekeeping, shall we? Last week, in my review of Divergent, our host, Jim Freund, got on my butt for pronouncing the word E-R-U-D-I-T-E as erudite. He was right, of course, no arguments there. But in my defense, I should point out that the characters in the film all pronounce the word as erudite, and I was just following suit. That said, I should also note that if there was a faction in the film that was referred to as the nuclear, I would have done the same, yeah, but also probably would have pointed out the error. Just boils down to this was a case where everybody was jumping off the cliff, and I was standing at the edge peering cautiously over and thinking, maybe they know something I don't. I should have more confidence in my own instincts, that's all.
And I'm going to pause Dan's review to say, and I didn't listen to it earlier, that I was rewatching a Ken Burns documentary, the jazz one, in which the announcer, and these people are very, very careful, the narrator said, erudite. I don't know. I think I'm right. And I checked every pronunciation guide in the world, and they all say erudite. And yet. So I'm off Dan's case on that.
Okay, enough of that. Let's think about something we probably haven't thought about before. Let's think about the moments immediately after Noah and his family seal the doors of their ark and cast off as the tumultuous rains fall and the waters rise. You know, the moments where our heroes are sitting there and listening as all of humanity is being exterminated outside. A key moment in Darren Aronofsky's Noah captures just that notion, the camera focusing in on the face of Russell Crowe as he plays the man both certain of what his lord has asked him to do and tortured by its implications. It's a moment of no little horror and serves as a dividing line between the two neatly integrated films that Noah is, a vivid and visionary fantasy keyed off the classic Bible tale and a deeper inquest into questions of faith and mercy and the nature of humanity itself. A bit of a personal note here. It's been a rough few months, and it's taken a lot out of me emotionally. In addition, I had by necessity taken a few weeks off from movie going, and when I finally returned, it was to Divergent, of all things. I came out of that mess fearing that I'd lost all joy in the practice of watching movies, that I'd essentially lost one of my reasons for living. Noah happily has restored my faith in cinema. Exciting, moving, entertaining things are still possible, and I shouldn't be surprised that Darren Aronofsky was the man to help prove it. His work hasn't always sat well with me, but even when it didn't, I respected his commitment to his vision and didn't regret being given a glimpse into what stirred his soul. With Noah, Aronofsky makes a concerted move towards the mainstream, but on his own terms. The first two acts, comprising the introduction to Noah and his family, the vision that reveals the Lord's judgment on humanity, and the building of the ark and the assembling of the animals, plays like the kind of epic fantasy we've been seeing in the past few years. The world as envisioned here is not the historic one of biblical times, but a fantastic realm where fallen angels take the form of lumbering rock monsters, forests sprout from the wilderness at God's behest, where Anthony Hopkins' Methuselah is part canny grandpa, part vision-inducing shaman, and where humanity's degeneracy is personified in Ray Winstone's shrewd, embittered leader Tubal Cain. All this may be a deconstruction of present-day mainstream historic fantasy, but it also harkens back to more classic examples of the genre. In many ways, Noah is to the Bible what Jason and the Argonauts was to Greek mythology, all the way down to CG animated sequences that deliberately have the strobing look of classic Ray Harryhausen animation. At the same time Aronofsky is hitting the traditional mainstream beats, he's not derelict in setting up the themes that will become crucial in the film's final act. God's directives, conveyed to Noah through complex and beautiful montages of imagery, contain ambiguities that form the final stages of the prophet's narrative arc. In Aronofsky's debut film, Pi, the director demonstrated a fascination for Jewish mysticism and biblical scholarship that he puts to work here, turning the film in its final act from the spectacle that preceded it into a drama of a man trying to interpret God's intentions from what, at best, is incomplete evidence. I suspect it's this final drama and how it affects Noah's relationship to the rest of his family that was Aronofsky's true reason for making this film. It's also, by the way, the moment that Noah's wife, Nama, as portrayed by Jennifer Connelly, comes into her own in opposition to her husband and his notion of God's will. But as powerful as the final act is, it does in some way bump up awkwardly against the scope and vividness of what precedes it, and isn't helped by the addition of a character who seems to be thrown in so there could be a suitably kick-butt finale within the drama. Even so, that isn't enough to diminish my enthusiasm for this film. It's a truly amazing work of fantastic filmmaking, imaginative with a core of dramatic depth, entertaining while being a truly personal statement. It is, all told, the first great film of 2014. I'm Dan Persons. If you love science fiction, fantasy, and horror film, please check out Cinefantastique Online at cfqonline.com.
A fellow by the name of Noah built an ark. Everybody knows he built an ark. He said, what did Noah do? He said, well, he built an ark. But very few people know about the conversation that went on between the Lord and Noah. You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. He was making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter. Vuba, 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 vuba. Noah. Somebody call? Vuba, vuba, vuba. Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah. Right. Where I am? What do you want? I've been good. I want you to build an ark. Right. What's an ark? Get some wood, build it 300 cubits by 80 cubits by 40 cubits. Right. What's a cubit? Let's see, a cubit. I used to know what a cubit was. Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark. Right. Who is this really? What's going on? How come you want me to do all these weird things? I'm going to destroy the world. Right. Am I on candid camera? How you gonna do it? Gonna make it rain 4,000 days and drown them right out. Right. Listen to this, you'll save water. Let it rain for 40 days and 40 nights and wait for the sewers to back up. Right.
sky streaked with gray, human kindness overflowing, and I think it's going to rain today. Scarecrows dressed in the latest styles, with frozen smiles to keep love away. Human kindness, it's overflowing, and I think it's going to rain today. Lonely, lonely. Tin can at my feet, think I'll kick it down the street. That's the way to treat a friend. Right before me, the signs implore me, help the needy and show them the way. Human kindness overflowing, and I think it's going to today.
April showers. There are so many different rain songs that I could have chosen there. I could do 5 hours, and I think I once did 5 hours of nothing but rain songs. And at that time, I had to actually spin discs. And not even CDs, was LPs, but we accomplished it. But that's still one of my favorites. Recently re-listened to that album by Judy Collins, In My Life, and it remains one of my favorites of all time. And of course, before that, Bill Cosby. You know, there's... The one line that's missing from that particular version of the Noah is, Noah, how long can you tread water? Oh, well. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. The program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund, and... tonight, you know, it's not even that long ago that for Valentine's Day, we did the story The Language of Love by Robert Sheckley. Sometime back, we did the story Shape by Robert Sheckley, a classic, classic story about... I guess about a lot of things, but primarily anti-authoritarianism. And I have an anecdote about that where many, many years ago I was working for a production company that in turn was working for Reader's Digest Audio. Before audiobooks were common, but they were doing some, and they did Shape by Sheckley, and I got to edit it, and they changed the text. next. They did not like the end. They did not care for the fact that the lead character changes into something else. He's going to investigate a planet, the planet being Earth. And every expedition that has come in the past has disappeared. And we find out why. Because they sort of go native. They, you know, a pilot can only be a pilot. And finally, this pilot, all he really wants to do is fly. So at the end, he turns into a gull. I don't remember how they made it change, but they made it change. And it was like, you know, what are you doing? Why? It's one thing to condense a story, but this was political. It was awful. So another time, we did the story, The Prize of Peril, which just ever so slightly resembles. Obviously, Sheckley stole the premise from The Running Man by Richard Bachman, a.k.a. Stephen King. He used a time machine because he wrote it about 15 years before Stephen King did. But, you know, I guess that's how it works. And if you check out the novels Dimension of Miracles and Mind Swap, both of which have any number of short stories between them, you will find a prize, a robot who's actually very paranoid, actually named Marvin. And you will also come across a planet designer, a fellow who designed Earth, who won an award. I don't remember if it's actually the Fjords. I think it is. Only he wanted the Fjords put in Africa or something like that. And fans of the radio drama, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, may find some resonance there. Sheckley has always been one of my favorite writers, whether it's Robert Sheckley, Finn O'Donovan, so many different names that he used in writing stories for the Digest magazines. He really comes out of the 50s Digest magazine area more than the pulp magazines. And magazines like the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction and Galaxy Magazine and Astounding, which became Analog, and all that good stuff. And I could not wait for the next Sheckley story to come out, because he was a master of satire, okay? And Murphy's Law rules the universes in which he writes. Okay, now this is not irrelevant, but it is a segue, as it were. The New York Review of Science Fiction Readings is a monthly series that I produce and curate. And every so often we get to do a tribute to various people. This is something that Henry Wessels, an antiquarian and writer and publisher, actually sort of started for us with his expertise on Avram Davidson. And we have since then also covered James Tiptree Jr., and with the help of Noel Sturgeon, Theodore Sturgeon's daughter, we covered Theodore Sturgeon. I always wanted to do Sheckley, but I never quite had the thing, until a few years ago, something that you're going to hear later in the program, I attended the other great reading series in New York, the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series, which is the solidly is the third Wednesday of every month. I missed it tonight. It's now that my show has been moved for about 3 years now to Wednesday nights, it's very, very difficult for me to get there. However, I am pleased and thankful to Gordon Linsner, who records them for me, so they are still available. But in 2009, there was this woman who I had not heard of outside of comic books, named Alyssa Quitney, who was reading there. And I thought, well, that's curious. I looked her up. She wrote romance novels and the like. And it became very clear to me, by the way, that she knew Ellen Datlow, co-curator of that series, very well. She was a second reader, and when she got up to read, she said, and as I said later, you will hear this, and usually she writes various books, such as Till the Fat Lady Sings and A Chronicle of Death's Foretold, but at that point she had just come out with a book, The Better to Hold You, about a female vampire. And she said, this being very different from the kinds of books that I'm known for, my agent, I believe it was the agent or editor, decided that it would be better if she used her other name. She is the daughter of Ziva Quitney, but she is also the daughter of Robert Sheckley. And so that book was published under the name Alyssa Sheckley. And I was immediately smitten with the idea that, okay, I have my excuse to do a Sheckley tribute. And it's taken, well, 4 or 5 years. But it's going to happen this coming Monday, darn it. And I'd like you to be there. So, with us on this tribute to Robert Sheckley will be Alyssa Quitney, or if you prefer, Alyssa Sheckley. She has been known to use both names, but she's primarily known as Alyssa Quitney. And by the way, if writing all these various books aren't quite enough, she's the former editor of Vertigo of DC Comics, having worked on such things as the Sandman books and by Neil Gaiman. And the moment I mentioned this, by the way, Henry Wessels, who had started me on this whole thing of doing tributes, said, well, I went to school with Alyssa Sheckley. You have to include me. Okay, so in addition to Alyssa Sheckley will be Henry Wessels. Now we're going to do a reading. The story, by the way, is Warm. And Alyssa informed me that her mother would love to be one of the readers, Ziva Quitney. And Ziva Quitney is a journalist and a fascinating person. I have not been able to find a lot of information about her online, but I found a couple of letters to the editor at New York Magazine, and I thought, okay, she's cool. She'll be one of our panelists and readers. And then Ellen Datlow. Okay, right, she runs the other reading series, the KGB Fantastic Fiction reading series. But she was at Omni Magazine, as was Robert Sheckley. Sheckley was the fiction editor for Omni Magazine for a couple of years, and he left. And Ellen came in and took over that job for some 14 years until the all-too-sad closing of the magazine, including the online version. And then some guy named Michael Swanwick, one of the great writers of science fiction. He has been nominated for more awards in science fiction, between the Hugo and the Nebula and the World Fantasy Award, than anybody in the history of Skiffy Awards. Skiffy being sci-fi is how I say it. And as Michael will, of course, put that, that means that he's also lost more than anybody else. Yeah, he hasn't won more, but he has been nominated more, and he's won his share. But nevertheless, This gives us quite an evening. So what we are going to do is we're going to hear a dramatic reading of a short story, Warm, which is not the typical Sheckley story. It's got a little bit, it's got the tongue-in-cheekedness, but it is not so much of a satirical story. And then we are going to have a panel discussion about the life and work of Robert Sheckley. So, all of this coming Monday, April 7th, at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art at 138 Sullivan Street. That's on Sullivan Street between Houston and Prince. Admission is free, but we will ask for a donation at the door, a suggested donation. If you cannot make that suggested donation, please come anyway. It is free. We can use the money. I lay out a lot of money to make these things happen, and it is not free for us to do it, and we record the thing, and we film the thing, and all that equipment, and all the stuff that goes on, and we serve cider and cheese, and all that has to be... Oh, and then we buy dinner and drinks for our guests, which, by the way, you are all invited to attend. And that's why we ask for a donation. But, if you can't afford it, it doesn't matter. Please, we're not the museum of whatever. Please come. Admission is free. Suggested donation. 138 Sullivan Street. This Monday, 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. This will be a lovely, wonderful event. So I have two pieces I have brought with me. I have that. Yeah. I think I am going to play the Elisa's reading first, and then we're going to hear a classic radio drama of Robert Sheckley's. There were many between X-1 and Dimension X. And I wrote one, as a matter of fact. Never produced it, but I wrote one based on Street of Dreams, Feet of Clay, which is a segment that he published in Wandering Stars, an anthology of Jewish science fiction, one of my favorite books of all time, edited by Jack Dann. And but is also taken from, I never remember which novel it is, Dimension of Miracles or Mind Swap. We'll discuss the movies based on Sheckley, the best one of which, of course, is The Tenth Victim, which starred Marcello Mastroianni and Ursula Andress, directed by Carlo Ponti. Andress is perfectly okay, but I would have preferred if Mr. Ponti's wife, Sophia Loren, had been it. But hey, it's nice to see Sheckley's fiction accurately brought to the screen. There have been any number of inaccurate depictions of Sheckley. Anyway, we're going to hear two pieces. We are first going to hear from KGB from the year 2009, November 18th. At the KGB Fantastic Fiction Series, co-hosted by and produced by Ellen Datlow and Matt Kressel, the Nebula Award-nominated Matt Kressel. And he is going to do the introduction here.
Hold on.
Rolling.
We're rolling. All right. Do you buy books? Because if you didn't, you're a bad person.